Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Smoking Snake podcast, the only place for all of the English language content, all about the Brasil de Rao, Brazilian football in general. I'm your host, Peter, and we are joined, as always, by Enric. We are back, Enric. We've had a little bit of time off, and we've had even more time off from when we talked about kind of the day-to-day and the week-to-week of what's actually going down in the pitches in Brazil, in the state championships, in Copa do Brasil, and of course, across the continent. So it's going to feel good, but there's going to be a lot of information coming out of our mouths and hopefully into your ears. Enric, what's going on? How are you?
I'm doing well, Peter. It's been a long time, just like you said. I feel like this year, compared to the last one, we stayed a little bit away from our weekly episodes. Hopefully our listeners aren't mad at us for doing that. But overall, just to put it into perspective, last year we recorded over 10 of them throughout state championships. And this year, this is the third one other than the guests that we've been having. So I don't know if this is something due to us being relegated and not really paying attention to what's going on among the top Brazilian clubs, or we're just lazy. Hopefully it's not the second one. And yeah, we promise you guys that starting from April, we're going to be doing exactly what we did last year. So don't be afraid of that.
Yeah, I think there's another factor. We're pretty busy these days, but nonetheless, yeah, this is something we really love. So let's dive into it. And I love that you brought up our guests. We've been having some great guest episodes, including the most recent one with Jamie, an expert on the City Football Group, and he talked to us about Bahia and was really, really interesting and articulate guy from the UK. And it's a short listen, so you can listen to it on your commute. Really good episode with Jamie. But you said, let's talk about the state championships, and let's go ahead and do that. We're going to spend most of the time on the Paulista and the Rio State Championship. And let's start in Sao Paulo, because there's been so much going on. And especially this past weekend was insane. We had Sao Paulo versus Palmeiras, and just a crazy game on the pitch. And then it got even crazier off the pitch. And even now I'm updating Globo on my other tab here. Leila Pereira is coming out and saying, making statements. And there's a lot of fallout with this big time derby. But let's talk about the competition as a whole. It's shaping up to be a pretty interesting one, with Palmeiras and Santos at the top, which I think is a little bit surprising. Sao Paulo as well doing well, and Corinthians lagging behind. Red Bull in the mix as well. Enric, I mean, I'll give you the floor here. Where do you want to start?
Well, let's start off with our favorite team, Santos, the team that has been relegated, as I mentioned earlier, starting the Campeonato Paulista season very well, actually qualifying for the next round after match week 6 or 7, something that we have failed to do throughout the entire season in the past 2 or 3 years. So I'm really glad that we got to do that ahead of time. But maybe one downside is that if the team has achieved its results early, then those last 4 or 5 matches, the coach is going to give to the young kids. So I'm not against the young kids playing for our team, but what I'm against of is the main players not performing at their best, not being physically ready. And I don't know what they do in training, but I feel like as soon as we go to those knockout matches where we'll be playing against Portuguesa, it might be an easier team than playing Ituano. I feel like the team will lack results, something that we've exactly seen from Santos lately. Tying to Mirassol, losing to Novo Horizontino at home, and then the last result, barely making it against São Bernardo, despite the match was played in Morumbi. So it's been a good run so far, 11 weeks, 22 points, still one match around to be played. Santos first, and again, as I said, they'll be playing Portuguesa, but after that, it's going to be an even more difficult task playing against the winner between Palmeiras or Ponchipreta. So I feel like as soon as we pass the quarterfinals, it's going to be Palmeiras in that semifinal, and then things might get complicated from there. But how did you see the team performing, Peter, throughout the state championship? Do you think it's going to be ready to perform and maybe reach the final this year?
Well, I mean, I think you hit a lot of nails there, and most of them on the head. I mean, Santos, I think, are a much better team than last year, but I do still question a bit of their mentality. I think, like you're saying, not only just the kids playing and maybe a lack of quality, as Caride rotates the squad after we've already qualified, but a lack of mental fortitude, keeping up that winning mentality. We saw it just now, or just this past weekend against Red Bull Bragantino, 1-0 loss, despite being up a man for most of the game. Of course, Ley do Ex, the law of the X, Eduardo Sacha, former Santos striker, scores the lone goal in the game. And I thought, Santos could have played better and should have played better. And if they want to win a trophy, they're going to have to.
Yeah, and thanks for reminding me about the red card because it's something that I forgot to say. It didn't happen just against Rebel Bragantino. I think when we played against Mirasol, we were losing at some point. We tied, and then the opponent got a red card, which meant that we should have gone and win this game easily for 20 plus minutes. We get the second goal, and around the 90th minute, the opponents, despite playing at home, they attack us and attack with 10 men and get an equalizer. I mean, it's something that we shouldn't be worried about because it's Mirasol and maybe the team had already secured qualification, but it just tells you about every opponent that we face. They're always willing to take points off us, knowing that we're vulnerable. We've dropped from first to second division for the first time, and they know that when there's a chance to attack or counterattack, they can get that goal. And that's exactly what happens, whether it's against 11 men, whether it's 10 men, and whether it's 9 men like Rebel Bragantino. So either way, we need to be a bit stronger, I feel like, and perform just like we started this competition.
Yeah, and Red Bull Braga are no slouches, of course. They had a great season last year, and I think they'll continue to be a good team. They're, I think, in third overall in the table. Santos second, Palmeiras first. And Palmeiras, undefeated in Paulista. They are the cream of the crop again this year. I think they're the favorite to win the tournament. São Paulo's cooled down a little bit. They've had some draws against some of the bigger teams, Corinthians, and now just in against São Paulo just recently. I want to talk about that because it's been a huge topic in Brazil for the last few days. We had the big game. We had the early goal to São Paulo, and then we had the penalty call. We had the calls for the expulsion of, I think, Richard Rios, the Colombian from Palmeiras, that weren't answered by the ref. And then we had the non-call penalty. And São Paulo fans feeling really hard done by that. Those three calls, they had an issue with all of them. I think our friend Alexandre posted something that, like, there had been no Palmeiras red cards in, 15 years in this fixture. And it all boiled over. There was a kind of a scrum in the hallways afterwards. There were some, kind of, I guess, hurtful comments said, to say the least. Xenophobic, some people are saying, against the Portuguese manager, Abel Ferreira of Palmeiras. Leila Pereira's come out. The sporting director of São Paulo's come out. And it's become a really tense situation. So a lot to break down there. But Enric, let's just start with São Paulo, maybe. I think they've cooled down. They've maybe hit a few speed bumps, but they'll have the support, and they can count on their new number 55. He's not a new player, but it seems like it. James Rodriguez has recommitted to the club. He was on his way out, had one foot out the door, reconsidered. And is back in the squad, weirdly wearing the number 55 in the Paulista. I'm sure that'll change back to his 19. But What are your thoughts on one, James back with São Paulo, and two, the fixture against Palmeiras?
Well, I'm glad that James Rodriguez has returned to the club. Many people were saying that he might not even play for São Paulo again, especially after last season and missing a couple of penalties when it mostly was most important for him and the team. But I think that São Paulo throughout the 2024 season has fallen, just like you said. When they first started the competition, I thought that they are the favorites to win it. But ever since they won the Copa or Recopa do Brazil against Palmeiras, it feels like they've cooled down a little bit, not getting the necessary results, losing at home against Santos, tying 2-2 against Rebel Bragantino. They were losing for the majority of the match. They scored two in the last 2 minutes, and then as soon as added time came on, they conceded to Laquitinha. I believe he played for New York Red Bulls last season. So again, a team dropping points here and there, tying 1-1, just like you said, against Palmeiras. So not having promising results throughout the competition. And even when they versed lower sides like Ponte Preta, they lost 2-0 away. They tied 1-1 to Guarani, and their only win is against Inter de Limeira, 3-0. And they put themselves in a tough situation in Group D, currently first with 19 points, but so do have Novo Horizontino and only 1 point less in third place, São Bernardo. So it's all up to see in the last match of the competition if São Paulo will be able to win it against Ituano. We've seen how strong Ituano is when it comes to last matches, just like they beat Santos last year 3-0 when it mostly mattered. So going back to the match against Palmeiras, I mean, it's a rivalry, and this is what you expect. You expect red cards, you expect things to happen. And I saw that after the match, one of the reporters came on and said that many people say Fortaleza and Sport Recife, all these teams, all the fans fight with each other, but nobody pays attention to what the teams are doing. Because after the match between São Paulo and Palmeiras, São Paulo, I think, blocked the Palmeiras coach to have you. And people said, well, if you're gonna make that public, then you're just gonna make fans even more mad. So this is exactly what happens, and maybe the clubs don't realize it, but they're putting gas to the fire and causing devastating things to happen to the club and to the fans.
Yeah, and I don't think they don't even realize. I mean, I think they realize it and they enjoy the tit for tat, the eye for an eye. And you're right. I mean, it's just a kind of juvenile situation, but one that you understand in the heat of the moment when you've got this tribal thing going on that these things can happen. But hopefully everything cools down and it doesn't spill over, although I'll definitely be watching that match in the Brasileirão, or should they meet in the final later in the Paulista. Again, that would be an incredible match. Another team that hasn't been doing very well, Corinthians. The last of the big five that we'll talk about really in São Paulo, still within a shout of qualifying for the next stage in the Paulista. It's going to be a little bit of a struggle. They need things to go their way, and they've got to beat Agua Santa. But a lot of doom and gloom in that area of the world, and it's come out just today actually that one of their midfielders, Maicon, who is on loan with from the Ukrainian side, Shakhtar Donetsk, has actually been requested to be purchased by Flamengo. So they might be again losing one of their biggest pieces in the midfield. And really, for me, you've had issues with Yuri Alberto, but their new signing is really one of the only highlights. Rodrigo Garro came in and he's made a big impact. He's the player that they thought, I think, Matias Rojas would be, who, by the way, adding compounding Corinthians' misery, has left the club, unpaid wages, kind of a gray area situation. But he's gone, he's history. And now they've got to rely on Gara. So what's your impression of Corinthians? You think they're gonna, be a relegation candidate this year in the Brasileirão? Do you think they're gonna succeed maybe in making it to the semifinals of the Paulista? What's your take on SCCP?
Well, SCCP, I feel like this season they have become the joke of the competition. And despite them not performing well in the Paulista, at least they have avoided relegation because I feel like every team that is in Santos group at the moment, they're all ready to get relegated, like Ituano and Santo André. But Corinthians, on the other side, still, I feel like they have replaced the Santos that used to perform like this in the last 2 or 3 years, fighting to get promoted and being unable to do so despite fighting hard in the last match round. Corinthians, it's game over for them. They need to focus on other things in Brasileirão. And you mentioned them maybe not being good in Brasileirão. I think that they did that last year, and maybe this season things are going to be turned around, and something that the state championships give lessons about is that teams perform better or worse compared to how they start the year. Just like América Mineiro last season, they reached the Mineiro final, they almost won the state championships, and then when it comes to the Brasileirão, they ended up getting relegated. So I expect nothing else from Corinthians, being bad in the beginning and then performing well as time goes on.
Yeah, and I think the best example of that, I believe, could have been 2019 or 2018. Cruzeiro went undefeated in their Libertadores group stages. They did great in their state tournament, and they ended up getting relegated. So you're right. It's important to take everything with a grain of salt. This is more or less a preseason when you really think about the players' development over the course of the season, the club's identity over the course of the season, and these squads aren't fully formed. The coaching staff are a revolving door, so you never know how these results are going to translate to later on in the season. But it is interesting to see that contrast. But yeah, I think Corinthians, you kind of hit it on the head once again. They're in some trouble right now, but they've got a lot of good pieces that I think will pay off in the long run. And I think right now, as it stands, right now, their squad is too good to be relegated. We've got one more match week, like you said, in the Paulista to go, and then we get to get into the playoff round, which is very exciting. And we can award some hardware. Speaking of awarding some hardware, the Cariocas did it. They awarded the first trophy. The Taça Guanabara has been awarded. The Cariocas kind of structured in an interesting, different way, but it's a trophy that goes to the first place team in the regular season. It's gone to Flamengo, and it's pretty clear why. They are, I think, by far the most impressive team that I've seen this year, certainly in Rio de Janeiro. And they won the trophy kind of with ease. And they're not getting any worse. Just today, they've unveiled their new signing in defense, Lyra Ortiz, coming over from Red Bull Bragantino. It's been in the works for what seems like months and months and months, and probably has been. I think around 7 million euros, rising to 8 with some bonuses. So a very expensive player, but one that really slots in the defensive line. And I mean, this team has it all. The depth, especially if they get Maicon as well. It's scary, the team that they're fielding. So no surprise they win the first hardware of the year. What are your thoughts on Flamengo as you look at their campaign in the Campeonato Carioca?
Flamengo has been very surprising this competition because something that we lack to see in Campeonato Carioca or any state championship is a team getting the wins, getting the points, and not conceding as many goals. And ever since we did the last podcast on the state championships, which was February 8th, if I'm not wrong, Flamengo has played four games against smaller sides. They have won all of those, either a 3-0 or 4-0 result. So they've not conceded. And even when they played big teams, they played Fluminense, they were able to beat them 2-0. So no goals conceded. They've only conceded one goal throughout the competition. They have scored 23. They finished the year with in the first place, something that they haven't done in the last 2 years, I believe. And then there is other surprising things. You see Botafogo for another year not making it to the quarterfinals of the Carioca Championships. You see teams like Audax Rio in the last place with 0 points, 11 matches played, and they've only scored one goal. I don't know who they scored that goal to, but definitely not going to help them out to survive and play in the top state championship of the state they're in. So crazy things happening in the Campeonato Carioca. We have another dark horse coming in and finishing second, Nova Iguaçu. And I can't wait to see how they're going to perform. And who knows, maybe they have all it takes to win this competition. What do you think, Peter?
That would be surprising, to say the least. But I will say this. Their striker, Carlinhos, is number one in the Carioca. I think he's got 8 goals in 10 matches. Very impressive. I think he's probably destined for a second division club or a lower table first division club. And it's kind of a mixed bag, like we've seen. Some can turn out to be like Richard Rios, and some can turn out to be like Christian Barletta or Bruno Mazenga, to bring it back to Santos. So we'll have to see. But they've got some talented players. Another player, you talk about Flamengo and their academy and how prestigious. The player that goes by the name of just Bill, which is a very funny name for a Brazilian. But Bill was a Flamengo academy grad, was a big highlight, I think, in the 2019 or 2020 Copinha, which is where he got on my radar, and actually a pretty bad Flamengo youth team. He was kind of their one highlight, and such a kind of funny name. All these years later, now I see him, and he was balling. He's got 3 goals, 4 assists, I think, in 10 games. Had a brace the other night. Where's the number 10? It's really quite impressive what they've done, and I don't know if they have the what it takes to beat a team like Flamengo, or even Fluminense. But it wouldn't surprise me if they beat Vasco and they make it to the final at least.
Yeah, I hope they beat Vasco. I was hoping that maybe Botafogo was gonna get that fourth spot so that Vasco can get kicked out, but Vasco needed to win their last match that they played, I believe, the Sunday, and they won it comfortably 4-0. I think Payet, the one of their main players in the competition, who has been scoring a lot, got the first goal here and just set the tone for Vasco and promoted them to the next stage. So hopefully their run is not gonna be long. And even if it is long, then I feel like they are 100% going to lose to either Fluminense or Flamengo, who are set to play in the semifinals of the Taça Guanabara, which sounds like a disease, but it's not. Name to say. But yeah, this is the Carioca. Botafogo on the other side, they're probably going to win the Taça Rio, just like last season, but I'm not sure how happy they're going to be. One of the biggest surprises from them is that despite Botafogo losing to Fluminense, or no, losing to Vasco da Gama 4-2, they were able to win against Fluminense 2 days ago. It was a crazy match, a lot of goals, and some crazy actions at the end with players getting dragged on and off the pitch.
I saw that. I was watching the game live. Great game, by the way. John Kennedy, Lele scoring to equalize after going down early. And then the late pen, and then another late goal from up and coming kid, Emerson Urso. Keep an eye on this kid. The announcers were high on him, and I've seen some tweets about him. And I just saw his name Emerson, and I thought he was mocking John Kennedy doing the bear, but Urso, of course, means bear in Portuguese. So I think he's kind of using that celebration as well. But I thought it was an added thing. And yeah, we had the players being dragged all over the pitch. I didn't still not clear exactly what was going on there and why they were doing that. The Botafogo player was down on the other side of the sideline. His own man dragged him back onto the pitch, and then the keeper for Fluminense came over and dragged him back off the pitch, and that ignited a huge, not necessarily a brawl, but some pushing and shoving at the end. So it was pretty standard for a derby in Brazil, I'd say.
Did you really not understand what's going on there?
Well, no, I mean, why would he get explained to me and the listeners?
Yeah, of course. So Botafogo at that point, I think we're winning 3-2. So of course they want to take the 3 points. And despite being 10 minutes at a time, that meant that the more time passes, it's better for Botafogo, but it's worse for Fluminense. So as soon as the Botafogo man went down, he went down out. So his own player took him from out the pitch and put him inside so that he can waste time, because you know that not only in Brazil but in any soccer match, if the player is injured and he's outside of the pitch, the team
Mm.
has 10 men. But if inside, then everybody has to wait. So that's why he got dragged. Fluminense keeper put him off so that they
Right.
can play and score goals and equalize 3-3. And then the Fluminense or the Botafogo teammate again came on, put him back in the pitch. So that's why all that happened. It was crazy. And every time I see that clip, I just start laughing, like as if I'm watching it for the first time. And it's crazy what happens to Brazil, whether it's actions like these, whether there's a dog on the pitch, there's always something funny. And this is why we love Brazil.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Yeah, that was a great game, and yeah, thanks for explaining that. That makes sense. I could have, if I spent some time thinking about it, I probably would have arrived at that. But yeah, Botafogo before that, that big triumph, firing their manager Thiago Nunes. We talked about him, made his name really with Atlético Paranaense a few years back. Didn't work with Corinthians. A few other teams, I think Flamengo. Just didn't work with. He was over in Peru, Sporting Cristal, did some really good work with them, came back to Brazil, and it just didn't work out as well with Botafogo. His managerial record was horrendous, to say the least. And they canned him, and Botafogo searching for a new manager now. Vasco da Gama, I'm glad you brought them up. They beat Botafogo 4-2. Vegetti still scoring. Galdamez, one of their new signings, the Chilean, scoring a goal and is looking like a great player. But also, you've already mentioned his name. Dimitri Payet has been top notch. I think he is the highest rated player in the Campeonato Carioca, according to SofaScore.com. And it's been really impressive to see what kind of an aging player can do, especially so far away from his homeland of France. So, really good stuff. And Vasco da Gama, a pretty powerful team in Rio. And I'm excited to see what they can do in the Brasileirão. All right. So we have São Paulo covered, Rio covered. Of course, we also have to touch on Grenal, Internacional, and Grêmio going head to head. Inter getting the better of Grêmio, 3-2, last minute pen from Alan Patrick. Really dramatic finish there. And of course, you probably saw the pushing and the shoving as per usual. Any comments on these two teams, Enric? I know Inter's just unveiled Rafael Santos Borré is in Brazil. He's in Porto Alegre. And he's joining the team. Grêmio, of course, are off the mark. Diego Costa has come in and scored his first, and Christian Pavon is scoring a lot as well. I think he's got like 3 goals, 3 assists, and 3 matches. So really nice output from him. Two pretty powerful teams, I think it's fair to say. And I'd be very curious to see where they end up in the Brasileirão this year.
Yeah, I feel like this season, Internacional is much better than Gremio, and this I'm not saying it just because of the result, but the way how they've been playing. Like we saw Inter last year struggling in the table, maybe even getting relegated at some points, changing managers, and Gremio at the other side finishing third or fourth after just getting promoted from the second division. So I feel like those two teams are gonna have a contrast. We're gonna see Inter either winning the Brasileirão or maybe finishing top four, and Grêmio on the other side struggling, because even though they got two goals in this Grenal match, I don't know who else is going to be scoring goals for them this season. Luis Suarez has left for Inter Miami. So is it going to be 35-year-old Diego Costa? Is it going to be Pavon or João Pedro Galvão, who used to play for Santos 3 or 4 years or maybe 5 years ago and came from Cagliari? So it Grêmio for me right now doesn't seem convincing, and the Soteldo has been injured, and he might not even play at all again for Grêmio until he goes to another club next year. So yeah, I feel like Inter is much better despite barely winning in the last minute of the match with Alan Patrick's penalty kick. They have won every single match since our last podcast. They beat São José, Brasil de Pelotas, Novo Hamburgo, who got relegated, and also beat Juventude. And on the other side, Grêmio has struggled to win. And when they did win, they scored a couple or many goals. And then other matches were a draw against São Luís and a draw against Ipiranga. So again, a team that hasn't been convincing in the playoffs of the Campeonato Gaúcho will be able to see Inter play São Luís, Guarani play against Juventude, Grêmio against Brasil de Pelotas, and Caxias do Sul, who reached the final last year against EC São José. So yeah, those are the fixtures, and hopefully we get to see Grenal in the final, something that we failed to see last season in the Gaúcho.
Yeah, I hope so. And I echo your concern about the goals from Gremio. I don't think Diego Costa is going to be up to the job. But I really do think that they're a pretty decent team. And Christian Pavon has really impressed me. I was listening to something today that and they were saying, you know, he's always had the talent. He just didn't have the minutes in Atlético Mineiro. You saw it at Boca, you saw it at LA Galaxy. So really exciting player, and I think he can definitely score some goals and contribute.
Yeah, and another thing that I want to point out is Grêmio has scored 23 goals. They've conceded 10, but their last two matches, they scored 10 goals combined. So if we eliminate those 10 goals, that means that they've scored 13 and conceded 10 in 9 games, which is about score one, concede one every match. So if tie games like that, and if they're not going to be able to score, then they're going to drop points. And of course, we're definitely going to see that in the Brasileirão this year.
Yeah, definitely. I know we had them shockingly high on our table and it paid off, but this year our predictions might be a little bit lower for Gremio. All right, let's go to Belo Horizonte, Campeonato Mineiro, Cruzeiro and Atlético Mineiro in this tournament. Also America, now relegated to the second division, but also in this tournament a powerful team. Cruzeiro chugging along. Atlético Mineiro, a few hiccups, which is interesting because for me, I think a couple of weeks ago, I thought they would surely be the best team in Brazil. I think I was having the same feelings I'm currently having about Flamengo and not being able to see how about, you know, how anyone could be better than them. Any thoughts on these two or three teams? I mean, it's so hard to get a grasp on what these teams actually are. But I do think that Atlético Mineiro will come good. And I think Cruzeiro actually are looking a lot better. They've got amazing defense. We knew that last year. And I think they've added some goals. And I think they might be a dark horse this year.
Yeah, I feel like you exactly. I feel like Atletico Mineiro has been winning the last two or three state championships, I think two. So now it's going to be time to change that up. I don't think America will be able to win it, but Cruzeiro definitely can. Looking at how they are out of Copa do Brasil, something that we're going to be talking about soon. So yeah, Cruzeiro seems like the most convincing team. They've won all four of their matches against smaller sides, and despite losing to América Mineiro 2-0, I feel like yeah, they're going to dominate and win the state championship for the first time in a long time for the club.
Yeah, that could be great. That would be great for them and Ronaldo, and I think it would be a great achievement for them, you know, after struggling so long in the second division, and it would be very welcomed to the fan base. Also, Coritiba and Atlético Paranaense going head to head and drawing. Really, the takeaway here is Gonzalo Mastroianni is a wonderful striker. He's been banging in goals for Atlético. I think a lot of people had question marks. How are they going to fare without Vitor Roque? That's still a very much an open question. I think they're going to be probably mid to low table this year, unfortunately. Don't love all of their signings, but Mastroianni has really put the team on his back, coming over from America. And I think last year we joked that he was basically the only name or one of two names on the score sheet for America. And he's kind of doing the same thing now for Atlético Paranaense. In other Atlético Paranaense Furacao news, they hired Cuca after firing their manager. Cuca, of course, comes with some baggage, and the fans are pretty divided. He has the well now annulled rape charge in Switzerland, which is a very nasty one, involving from the 80s, involving a 13-year-old girl, which is just I mean, pretty horrific. Convicted, and he had his sentence recently annulled, which I think a lot of people took as in, oh, he's not guilty, they made a mistake, whatever. But really, it was an issue with the process. He was convicted, you know, in absentia, so he wasn't there. So it was not, you know, an annulment based on merit, which I think caused a lot of confusion. But Kuka has always denied it, the allegations. And he's back coaching in Brazil. So we'll see how long he lasted. He lasted, I think, 2 days with Corinthians. The fans weren't having that, but kind of an ugly side to the game. And I wish it would get resolved and someone would take some responsibility. But at the end of the day, he is the manager and we'll see what he can do. He had a lot of luck with Santos a couple of years ago. And we'll see what he can do with this Atlético Paranaense team that do have some rapid weapons. And also, just quickly on Coritiba. They signed Leandro Damião, the striker that we talked about a few weekends ago or weeks ago, I guess. The former most expensive Brazilian transfer in history. So interesting signing, and we'll see what he can do in Serie B as he's sure to face Santos. Any thoughts on that, Enric? I know I've said a lot. It's kind of a ramble, but.
I mean, starting off with Leandro Damião, he's definitely going to score when he plays in Vila Belmiro.
Oh no.
But looking at Cuca, like, of course, the rape allegations are bad. But taking that aside, and let's say nothing had happened and all those claims are false, just like he says, I really wish him the best. For me, he's one of the best managers that I've seen for Santos. Definitely, probably nostalgic when we look at the Copa Libertadores run that we had 4 years ago. But yeah, I feel like even when he joined Corinthians, I was happy to see him manage a team again. And despite it lasted short, hopefully now with Atlético Paranaense, it's going to turn up better for him and his team. And maybe he's not going to be feeling all that pressure that he would have probably felt by managing the Paulista team, Corinthians, that comes with a lot of problems financially and with a new president. So yeah, I wish him all the best for the Atlético Paranaense.
Yeah, they're going to be a great, interesting team to watch. We'll see what they do. All right, Eric, let's talk about another piece of silverware that was handled out or handed out this past week. We had the Recopa Sudamericana. the champions of the Copa Sudamericana versus the champions of the Copa Libertadores. So Liga de Quito facing Fluminense. Liga dominated in the first leg a couple weeks ago in Ecuador. We've got to mention it. Altitude played a factor. Shoot me. I'm one of these people that believes it plays a factor. I know the Ecuadorians, Peruvians, Bolivians will say that's bullshit, but no, that definitely played a factor. Liga de Quito was dominant in the first leg, and they got a late winner, 1-0, traveling to the Maracana packed stadium, and Fluminense turned the tables. This time they were dominant, and it took until the 76th minute, but John Arias scored and would add a second on the penalty, despite a few red cards, including the Jean Kennedy. Really great turnaround. I think it's what you'd expect at the Maracanã with a team like Fluminense. But yeah, another trophy, another check mark for Fluminense. They really enjoyed the win, and it was just awesome to see, a trophy being handed out in one of the temples of football.
Man, looking back at the first round, as soon as I saw them conceding a late goal by Arce against Liga de Quito away from home, I just thought this was going to be Flamengo Independiente return. Like exactly what happened last year, where Flamengo lost 1-0 away from home. And then they played at home, struggled, scored a late equalizer by Arrascaeta, went to penalty kicks, and then lost because Arrascaeta missed that pen. So I felt like it's gonna be the same way. Fluminense has struggled. It took them 75 minutes to get that first goal, and as soon as they did it, they even got a second from a penalty kick, and John Arias gets two goals. He wins Fluminense this important trophy that they have never won before, and John Kennedy, despite him getting a red card, he won some Copa Libertadores 2 or 3 months ago. So it's all about the Johns giving Fluminense a trophy in their home stadium, so it's great to see. And maybe their fans were a bit afraid playing against LDU because LDU was their opponent in Libertadores in 2008. So maybe they thought that this is going to be another match that they're going to lose an important competition to them. So thankfully, they got the job done in 90 minutes. There was no need for penalty shootouts, no need for extra time. So great to see Fernando Diniz, former Brazil national team coach, get another trophy. He seemed extremely happy, as he should be, winning that competition for Fluminense and their fans as well. They deserve it. Maybe the last couple of years they've felt like their team has let them down a little bit by seeing how Flamengo has been performing and winning different competitions without any issue. Now Fluminense get to be on the same page as those big Brazilian teams, and yeah, hopefully this is the first of many for them in the future.
Yeah, I'm not seeing them in the Carioca this year. I'm not convinced that they're at the same level. I think a bit of the champions curse or the champions hangover or whatever you want to call it, they're not at that level yet, but that's not to say that they can't get there. And yeah, I was really happy that they won. We had our buddy Martin Benitez on the pod a long time ago, passionate Liga supporter. But he was in the stadium watching, and unfortunately his team came up short. But Fluminense taking the trophy home, and yeah, another check mark in the Infinity Stones for them, trophy that they've never won before. So, and also really importantly, they knock off finally their sort of bogey team. Remember, they lost in Libertadores final to them. They lost in the Sudamericana final to Liga de Quito the following year. So this Ecuadorian team has kind of been chasing them all over the continent. Finally, they get one over on them. So good for Fluminense. And yeah, like you said, good for John Kennedy, who's had quite a year. And I'm wondering if he moves to Europe or if he's just going to be this Brasileirão legend. He's kind of at that age where if it doesn't happen soon, I don't think there's going to be a lot of big European clubs looking to bring him in.
Yeah, John Kennedy, a name that maybe teams in Europe should be aiming for. And who knows, maybe he'll stay at Fluminense for a little bit long. But Are you concerned about the future of Andre? I mean, the player was linked to so many Premier League clubs 2 or 3 months ago. We even talked to our friend Fluminense for Foreigners about him potentially going to Fulham or Liverpool. And ever since 2023, nothing has happened. It seems like he's set to stay for Fluminense, maybe for another season, two, who knows? We've seen players jump from Brazil to big teams like Lucas Beraldo performing. PSG playing both of their round of 16 matches against Real Sociedad. And then there's a player like Andre who constantly gets called up to the national team, plays mainly for Fluminense in that midfield, their spot. So are you concerned that maybe his time is going to fly by, just like how it happened with Sandri of Santos a couple of years ago, and many players that are going to have that possibility in the future?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that's a question that a lot of people are asking themselves right now. I mean, he was linked to clubs as big as Liverpool, other clubs, Fulham as well was linked. I don't know. It's an open-ended thing. I'm not too worried. I think, if he was a couple years older, maybe 2 years older, I'd be a lot more worried that he may not make that leap across the pond. But I'm not too worried right now. But it is interesting how these things ebb and flow, how there's so much interest and then it kind of evaporates. I think a lot of that or some of that has to do with the needs of these big European teams, the price tag for Fluminense, what they're looking to get out of him. And there's a bunch of other factors, but I think eventually he will go. And remember, it got really quiet right before Marcus Leonardo left for Benfica. Before that, months before he was linked, he was all but certain to move to Roma, to a Premier League club, I think was in the mix as well, maybe another Serie A club. There was all these links. It was all but a certain move. And then just like the snap of your fingers, it was all gone. And then in a matter of days, the rumors came out about Benfica. And he was there. He was in Lisbon, a couple of days later. So I think something similar could probably happen and will probably happen with Andre. He's got all the tools in his toolbox to be a great midfielder, defensively, and he's adding, different parts to his game in Brazil. I think a lot of big European clubs still have their scouting departments all over this guy. And I think a year from now, I doubt we'll be talking about him with Fluminense. Or in the Brasileirão out at all.
Yeah, 100% agree with you, and hopefully we don't see any player end up like that. I understand if they're staying to the club to perform and to grow as a player, just like how Neymar waited before making the move to Barcelona, which he could have done since 2011. I remember at some point Yola even said that I used to show the players at Barcelona clips of this guy from Brazil and what he was able to do since 2011 when they played him in the Club World Cup final. So how many coaches throughout Europe do that in a daily basis, look at Brazilian players or South Americans in overall?
And this topic almost merits its own episode because it's such a great topic to get into. And I think the prevailing wisdom on the European side of the Atlantic is you buy the kids as young as possible. Think Endrick, think Rodrigo, Vinicius Jr. Then as soon as they're 18, you bring them over. Even if they play in the youth leagues, you mold the player that you eventually want. And that's the way to do it. I don't know that that's always the best way. There's so many moving parts, and I really think there'd be some value in players that are 24, 25, 26 coming over to Europe from Brazil. You've seen it, not all the time. A lot of time clubs don't want to take a risk, but especially for a midfielder like Andre, I think that, should he if he was 2 years older, 3 years older, whatever, I still think that, I mean, he can play obviously at a high level in Europe. And I really think that he's a great player. But it really goes back to that question of when's the ideal time to bring these players over. What works, what doesn't. You talk about Vinicius Jr., Rodrigo, Endrick. Well, he's not there yet, but no one really talks about what about Renier, the player from Flamengo that was on the same track as Vinicius and Rodrigo, had the same plan and didn't pan out. He's actually with another kid Juventus brought over from Santos, Kyle George. Both of them are at Frosinone in Italy right now. And they're kind of the flip side of that coin. So it's interesting. It's a huge topic, and I think that European clubs need to be a little bit more open-minded about some of the players as they move on. It's not all about cradle robbing, so to speak. There's a lot of quality up and down the age range in the Brasileirão. All right, Henrik, let's talk about Copa do Brasil. We had the first round take place. Some surprising results, some not so surprising results. Why don't you talk us through what caught your eye as far as the fixtures go that just took place, and also the second round fixtures that are coming up.
Yeah, the first round of matches just finished yesterday with the last game, Fluminense of PI losing 3-0 to Fortaleza. This game was postponed twice. One of them for the fact that the Fortaleza players were injured, and we all know what happened in their match against Sport Recife with fans attacking their bus and many of the players having bloody faces, bloody arms and bodies. So tragic scenes. And the second reason why it got postponed is because the field had so much rain and bugs in it. There were crazy clips on the internet, so it had to be played yesterday, which Fortaleza comfortably won 3-0 in the second half. But we've also had other great results. We've seen Bahia beat Motoclube, Atlético Goianiense got the job done, and so did Cuiabá, Corinthians, Juventude, Vasco da Gama, Internacional, Criciúma, and most importantly, Brasiliense. Thankfully, Luiza's team has made it to the second round. It's not going to be an easy match for them. They're going to be playing against Criciúma, the newly promoted Serie A team. So hopefully, by playing in the Federal District at home, they have an opportunity to jump from the second to the third round of the Copa do Brasil. And for me, I hope they reach the final and win it all, but it's going to be extremely difficult. But we've seen good results from other underdogs as well, like Sousa beating Cruzeiro 2-0, São Luís beating Ituano 2-1, Coritiba being eliminated by Águia do Maraba, and the same thing goes for América Mineiro losing 2-0 against Maringá. There were 8 minutes of added time, and Maringá scored in the 95th and the 98th to eliminate América Mineiro. So sad scenes for the team that just got relegated. So yeah, these are the fixtures for the first round. In the second round, we'll be able to see Vasco da Gama play against Água Santa, Caxias do Sul against Bahia, Brasiliense Criciúma, as I mentioned, and another tough match for both teams, Nova Iguaçu against Internacional. Let's see how the team that just made it to the quarterfinals of the Carioca will be playing against an Inter team who is set to win the Campeonato Gaúcho. So this is definitely going to be a great match, Peter.
Yeah, that's really unfortunate for them because I'm sure they would have liked to build on this momentum and beat up a smaller team, and they get one of the giants of Serie A. So it's unfortunate. You mentioned Brasiliense. We're big fans of the club here. Shout out Luisa, of course, Estevao, the VP who had joined us for an episode a while back. They're also involved in something called the Copa Verde. Involved, it's a kind of a regional competition with clubs from Central Brazil, Northern Brazil, and we wish them the best of luck there. They're advancing into the round of 16. And also, I'm glad, I just want to bounce back to that because I forgot that was so long ago and we didn't talk about it, I don't think, yet. The attack on the Fortaleza bus was totally unacceptable. It was just one of those points where it was nice to see Brazilian football all get together. Sport Recife fans threw chunks of cement at the Fortaleza bus. Really nasty pictures of cuts, deep cuts, stitches, like you said, bloodied bodies and bloodied faces from the smashed glass and chunks of rock and cement. So it was nice to see Brazilian football get behind that. or get behind Fortaleza, including the president of Sport Recife, and the club. And I believe they came out in their next match all wearing Fortaleza shirts for warm up, which was a nice touch. Obviously, you don't want these things to happen in this first place, but very classy about it. And Sport Recife also rocking a new player, Lucas Lima, is with Sport, joining from Santos. He'll play them, of course, in the Brasileirão Serie B. And like Leandro Damião, he's sure to score because the Ledu X is a real thing. All right, Enric, let's wrap things up here. Transfer deadline day is on Thursday, the 7th of March. I'm really hoping to get a transfer episode out very soon. After the deadline, we'll kind of go over some of the transfers, hopefully with a cool guest. We'd love to bring that because there's tons to talk about there. One of the crazier ones that I just want to highlight now, and we'll come back to see if this crosses the line, but Yannick Bolasie apparently linked Chris Yuma, former Crystal Palace man, and Congolese winger is linked. Super random, kind of like Islam Samani to Coritiba. Not on my bingo card, so to speak, but would love to see it. Enric, also, we had some huge news for the Seleção. Dorival Jr. calling up for the first time his squad for the two friendlies, two challenging friendlies. We complain and we whine about Brazil doesn't play these big European sides. They get two friendlies against England and against Spain, which will be great for the development of the team. And wow, there were some interesting calls here. Maybe I'll just go through the team and tell me what caught your eye. Goalies, Bento, Ederson, Rafael from São Paulo. Defenders, Danilo, Jan Couto, Ayrton Lucas, Wendel, Beraldo, Gabriel, Marquinhos, Murillo from Palmeiras. Midfielders, Andreas Pereira, Bruno Guimarães, Casemiro, Douglas Luiz, João Gomes, Lucas Paquetá, Pablo Maia from São Paulo. And then the strikers and wingers, Endrick, Gabriel Martinelli, Rafinha, Richarlison, Rodrigo, Savinho from Girona, and of course, Vinicius Jr. So some familiar faces and some really new faces. Take it away. What do you find interesting? What do you like? What do you hate about this call from Dorival Jr.?
There's two things that I want to say. One of them that I like from Dorival, and the second one what I don't like. So what I like is that the fact that we get to see new faces, we get to see players get called up for the first time, like Savinho, that plays for Girona. He has been phenomenal. Same thing goes for João Gomes of Wolves and many other European competition players. But we get to see many Brasileirão players as well, which I'm really a fan of. And to be honest, there is one, two, three, four, five, six, seven of them that play in Brazil currently. And if we count Beraldo, that's going to be eight. But the thing that I don't like is the fact that those coaches that are coaching the national team and the calls that they've been making, I wonder if they really like the players the way that they play, or is it because they've managed those players and that's why they're calling them up? Because we saw the same exact thing by Fernando Diniz. We saw many Fluminense players get called up, maybe that didn't perform at their best, but we know they got called up because of Fernando Diniz and him coaching Fluminense at the same time. So I wonder if players like Rafael, Beraldo, and Pablo Maia, like, I know Pablo Maia is amazing and he scored one of wonder goals last season, but does Pablo Maia really deserve to play in the national team against two big rivals, just like you said, England and Spain, and two tough stadiums, Wembley Stadium and Santiago Bernabeu? So Endrick will have a chance to play again or in the stadium where he'll be in 6 months with Real Madrid. So it's going to be great to see those Brazilians perform there and players who haven't made the move to Europe yet, just like we mentioned, Andre perform in big venues in Europe. So hopefully that's going to motivate them even more to perform well with their respective teams and make a jump in the future.
Yeah, so I get what you're saying, but I think it's really it's kind of one and the same, right? He knows these players. He's not just calling them to make Sao Paulo look good. He knows that he likes these players and he knows these players. And I think there's some eyebrow raisers. Murillo from Palmeiras. I don't know about that one. There's a lot of jokes that he meant to call the Murillo from Corinthians, or I guess formerly of Corinthians, now with Nottingham Forest. I love Ayrton Lucas, love that call. Rafael, the keeper from Sao Paulo, I know he's been doing great. He's an amazing keeper, but I think he's 34, right? I don't know if that was the best thing. And I love the new faces, and I like seeing these players. You might say, oh, Pablo Maya, does he really deserve? He's a young up-and-coming midfielder who's going to be in Europe. He's going to be in Europe. He's got a bright future in front of himself, and he's a real candidate to be on a team that could possibly win a World Cup. So he has every right, I think, to pick a player like Pablo Maya, see what he's made of at the highest levels in some of the most, prestigious temples of football. Can you say the same thing about Andres Pereira? I don't think so. I think he's 28. I think he's past his best. I know he's doing well for Fulham right now, but again, smaller club in the PL, in the Prem. I don't know. I don't think he has a future in the way that Pablo Maya does for the Seleção. So I don't have a problem with those calls. Marquinhos, people are kind of up in arms about that call. I think he's still a great player and a leader, more importantly. Has he been not performing as well for the Seleção? Yes, of course. And then attacking options, Brazil has tons. Love to see Savinho in there. Endrick, yeah, of course we want to see him, of course. But we've seen him in the team. Maybe Vitor Roque, just throwing that out there. I think we could have seen some other players as well. Gabriel Martinelli, I'm not sure how he's been doing. I saw some criticism on him on Twitter. Yeah, there's a selection of players that I don't know that belong, some of the older players that don't have a future, but I love a lot of these other calls. And again, I just love to see fresh new faces. Let's see what they're made of. Can Dorival use you? Yes or no? If it's a yes, great. Let's see them more in the team. Let's see them in competitive matches. We have Copa America this summer, which I'm going to talk about in a second. Yeah, and Douglas Luiz again. I think that was Douglas Luiz and Ayrton Lucas. I think are my two highlights. Ayrton, really, really happy to see him. You guys know I'm like the chief minister of propaganda for him, so really happy to see that. And a lot of players from the Brasileirão, which leads me into the last subject, Enric. We'll talk about Enric. I see you've got the opening fixtures for the Serie A 2024. It starts on April 12th. It's really snuck up on us, and I can't wait to do our big prediction episode because that's so much fun. and there are some great fixtures that maybe I'll ask you about in a second here. But something really important involving the Copa America is that the Brasileirão this year is not stopping for the Copa America. The fixtures are going to continue, which means players that are going to be leaving their teams for the Seleção or any national team, they're going to be missing in action. And I think that's a big reason why Maicon was being signed by Flamengo. Erici Pulgar, Chilean national, possibly going to be called. Gerson as well. He hasn't really been featuring in the Brazilian team, but I think he's got the quality to be there. So it's going to be really important for these teams to have a lot of depth because I don't know how many match days exactly, but it's a lot. It's kind of a lot of match days that they're going to be missing some of their key players, their best players. Let's be honest. I mean, these players, if they're playing even for a squad like Venezuela, you've got, well, with Santos in Serie B, Rincon, other players, Soteldo from Gremio, even these smaller national sides have key players for big teams. So I think the big teams that have a lot of depth are going to really need and succeed more than usual this year because they've got this window where I think a lot of teams are going to be missing key players and they can call upon their depth. It's controversial. Brazilian schedules aren't any crazy as it is, so I understand that they're not stopping. I wish they would for the sake of the football, but hey, the show must go on and we're just going to have to adapt. And I think it adds an interesting layer to this season. Curious to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I like the fact that it's going to be nonstop because it gives us as viewers, as fans, more games to be playing at a certain time, other than compared to like waiting for a certain competition to end and then resuming Brasileirão. And of course, by watching Santos, I don't think that's going to make any difference for us in the second division. But yeah, I agree with you. I feel like players or teams need to make signings ahead of time and make sure that the players that they're bringing in, they're probably not going to be playing for their respective national teams and having a chance to play for the club when it mostly matters. And going to Brasileirão Serie A, just like you mentioned, we have the first, or we have all 38 match weeks, but I just added notes about the first two or three, just to sort of see what sort of matches we're going to be able to see right from the beginning. On match day one, we have a big clash between Corinthians and Atlético Mineiro. Match weeks two brings us the Grêmio against Atlético Paranaense, Flamengo playing São Paulo, and Palmeiras Inter. And then in match week three, that's when the derbies start to appear. We have the Mineiro derby between Atlético Mineiro and Cruzeiro. And we have the Paulista Derby, Red Bull Bragantino against Corinthians, alongside Fluminense Vasco, Palmeiras Flamengo, and Atlético Paranaense Internacional. So, as you said, I can't wait for the competition to start. It's starting 3 days earlier than last season when it began on April 15th, if I'm not wrong. So, 3 days earlier, it gives us more freedom to watch Brasileirão, and I can't wait for that prediction episode. So, I'm gonna make sure we make or have some surprises in there, so
Yeah,
maybe they come true, just like Grammy last year.
for sure. And yeah, I mean, it's funny you were talking about how much football is going to be on during the Brasileirão and the Copa America overlap. Man, we're going to be busy then. We're going to be busy. We're going to have to be potting our asses off. But yeah, it's going to be awesome. It's going to be great. It's just the best. Tournament football is amazing. Knockout tournament football. And the Brasileirão is good, is just the best league in the world in my eyes. Which is why we do this. But yeah, as far as the fixtures go, that Palmeiras Flamengo match is gonna be huge. That match week three, right off the bat, the two most successful teams in the last 5, 6 years in Brazil. It's gonna be awesome to see. Not much more to say there. So lots to look forward to, a lot of ground we covered too. Henrik, I'm pretty proud of us. We covered a lot of ground. We'll be back very soon. Again, transfer deadline day on the 7th of March. We've got the semifinals and finals of state championships coming up. We didn't even mention Red Bull Bragantino playing Botafogo and Copa Libertadores as well. Libertadores group stages are on the verge of starting. Sudamericana is starting up. So it's an exciting time of year. Teams are forming, and there's just a lot of good stuff to come, including more episodes. But for now, goodbye and good night.